members. Good morning. Call this meeting to order, and we have minutes of March 10th. Representative Long, would you be moving those minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move the minutes.
Representative Long has moved the minutes of March 10th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
In the opposition, the minutes are adopted. Well, now we have Representative Tapke with House File 3431. I will move House File 3431 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you for being here. Welcome, and tell us about your bill.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. It is an honor to be here for the first time. And I'm just remembering that I messed that one up, so I apologize for that.
We have different rules than everybody else.
All right. I love this. Thank you, Chair.
Rules not don't.
So today we have before you House File 3431. This is part of the Climate Action Caucus group of bills that I'm honored to be part of that. We have a Conservation Reserve Program, state incentives in the amount of $6.5 million. So Conservation Reserve Program is a wonderful, wonderful program. I grew up on a farm in Northwest Iowa where we had a lot of CRP land in the 80s and 90s. A lot of that land is now no longer in Conservation Reserve Program. And so what this is it's a set aside for land to be put into a more natural state. It does a really great job of sequestering carbon. It does a really great job of improving habitat for wildlife, and it does a lot of really great things for the environment and for us as humans as a whole. And so, Madam Chair, I have a speaker here from Pheasants Forever to testify. His name is Mark Henry, to talk about how this program specifically is impactful for our wildlife in Minnesota.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for seeing me, Madam Chair. I do wear a few more hats. I'm Mark Henry, excuse me. I'm a longtime resident of Dakota County, Castle Rock Township. I grew up on the Big Slough, which that was the historic name. It's actually the south branch of the Vermilion. And as a Pheasants Forever member and going back 50 years, I've wandered that and enjoyed that, and I'm all about the outdoors. That being said, I'm also on the Dakota County Ag Society Fair Board. We have the largest conservation easement in Dakota County. We have a program called FNAP. It's a county program about preserving natural areas. And I'm proud to say that I'm the steward of that. I'm also on the Vermilion River Watershed Joint Powers Organization. Planning Commission, I'm the chair this year. I'm not a professional when it comes to wildlife biology or conservation, but I planted my first acre of prairie decades ago. I guess what's important about this bill is I'm all about pheasants, but CRP isn't being utilized as well as it could. And if we can target specific areas, sitting on the watershed, we know that the south branch where I grew up, and historically the representative's correct, there was a lot of CRP around that particular sub-watershed in the 80s and 90s. That's gone. But we know one thing, by monitoring that sub-watershed, we know that we have a big problem with nitrates. And 20 miles downstream, the city of Hastings is spending millions of dollars to remove those nitrates from their water supply. And we know it's coming from areas like the South Branch. So if we can utilize CRP and this extra appropriation to get more grass on the ground, I'm hoping that we can reduce it at the source and not spend the money where it's needed in the municipal wells. Quite honestly, I'm looking at a reverse osmosis system for my house because I'm drinking bottled water. That being said, when I leave here today, I'm going to go home and get in a road grader and start touching up a township road. That's what I do for a living. So I've been dealing with road right-of-ways, primarily township, for over 20 years. And one of the things I'm seeing a lot of is infiltration of soils, sediments into our town's ditches, our county ditches, the DOT, I would guess. And it's a cost. And maybe we can look at some of these areas that are highly erodible and try and get this program in place on those. So what I'm saying is targeting. Is that your intent? Mm-hmm. Okay. So the bottom line is, I'll give you an example. Last fall, I replaced a center line culvert down on 270th Street in Castle Rock Township. And when I went to put that culvert in, I found the 40-year-old culvert that I was replacing. And there is so much sediment in this drainage system now, I had to lift the grade of the new culvert 2 feet. The drain tile that we put in 20 years ago to try and reduce spring breakup, the outlet, I haven't found it yet. There's that much sediment in this system. And I'm hoping that practices, I work with the Soil and Water Conservation Districts a lot. I'm hoping that this practice will help them to target areas so that we don't have these kinds of expenses on town ditches and county ditches, et cetera. I'm all about birds and bees, believe me, but I think these are important things too. So, by the way, I do like to hunt pheasants too. So, anyway, anything else I can?
They'll ask this question.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So, is there a discussion?
Madam Chair, could I add one thing real quickly?
Yes.
So just so everyone knows that in Minnesota, there's currently just over 1 million acres enrolled in the CRP program. So the CRP is a federal program, and they have reduced the incentive for actually using the CRP. And so CRP enrollment has steadily decreased in Minnesota. And over the next 5 years, there will be almost 500,000 CRP acres across Minnesota that are expiring and moving out of the program. And what we're trying to do is make sure to at least keep that land in CRP and add more acres in the state of Minnesota. And so what this program will do is help to add further incentive and make sure that it cash flows so that adding more CRP and continuing to keep CRP for our farmers, land in CRP for our farmers, makes sense financially as well as environmentally and with the context of climate. So that's where we're at. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a question to the testifier. You had mentioned that you want to focus this on highly erodible lands and erodible lands. Do you feel like that should be kind of written in this bill so that we could focus? Obviously, dirt doesn't necessarily float on flat land as much, so it should be, you know, not necessarily on prime farmland, but focus these dollars onto erodible or highly erodible lands.
What I see in the field, you know, my first reaction is yes, but no. I think, anytime we can put grass on the ground, it's a good thing. I think it could be a good tool on highly erodibles. That's why I mention it. I don't think it should be limited to that. You know, if we don't have a lot of, in a certain county, anybody that wants to step up to the plate, but maybe the incentive could be higher on highly erodibles.
Representative Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just what do you think would work? Like, if we could change the bill, if we could incentivize highly erodible, or, like, I mean, have you thought about that as far as, I mean, we're setting policy here, and we want to hear what your ideas are about that.
Well, what I'm seeing in the bill, it looks to me like Bowser is going to be setting that, you know, that they can incentivize certain lands. And moving forward, you know, you would expect that good state agency to do that. So I don't want to limit it. That's what I'm trying to say here. I do want to see more grass on the ground. And if we can get any grass on the ground, it helps with water quality. It's pollinators. That's a big thing right now. So any grass on the ground is good. But I think it's a good idea to try and incentivize highly erodible and water quality areas, like what we did with buffers a few years ago.
I don't. Representative Jasinski.
So what are your thoughts on buffers?
What are my thoughts on buffers?
We're not going there.
Okay.
That's a different bill, my friend.
Okay. Members, I don't see any more questions, so I'll renew my motion that House File 3431 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The next bill that we have on the calendar is House File 3590.
As soon as grab a seat,
I'm going to move House File 3590, be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Idelson, welcome to the committee, and please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair and members, House File 3590 allows for an appropriation to the University of Minnesota Board of Regents to have the university investigate the potential for carbon sequestration use on public and private lands in Minnesota and submit recommendations to the legislature. Carbon sequestration has been identified as one of the central solutions to global warming. We already have a large amount of carbon in the atmosphere. Now the challenge becomes, how do we remove it? Reducing emissions is incredibly important, but in order to make progress, we have to look at a comprehensive package to address our changing climate. The University of Minnesota is a leader, and I think having them look at ways that we can use sequester carbon in the state of Minnesota would be helpful. The Paris Climate Agreement talks about this being one of the ways that we can actually tackle climate, and I have two testifiers today, and I want to honor members' time, so I will move straight to them.
Yes, hello. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you all and speak in favor of this bill. My name is Mark Anderson. I live in Wayzata with my wife. We've been here for 3 years. I didn't think about myself as an outdoor enthusiast my entire life, but I know that I am. I grew up in New Brighton, but my grandparents had a place up near Grand Rapids, near Remerd, Minnesota, and I started going up there during the summers when I was younger, and he taught me to hunt and fish and really instilled in me my love of the outdoors. As a teenager, I got into bike touring, and I've seen most of the state of Minnesota on the seat of a bicycle, taking tours with Jim Klobuchar when I was younger. He was a columnist with the Star and Tribune who ran these tours around the state, and those were a lot of fun. I got married, and now we spend most of our time during the summers in the Detroit Lakes area where my wife grew up. And she has a lot of family up there. We have a lot of friends. And we do everything outdoors. We hunt, we still fish, we boat, we canoe, we cross-country ski, we hike, we bicycle. Virtually every sport that you can think of, we do in the state of Minnesota year-round. Probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, I started to understand and learn about what was going on with the state of our environment in Minnesota and with climate and what's happening with climate change. And I'm very concerned that the love that I've had for our environment and what I've been able to experience, my kids and my grandkids are not going to be able to share. And we're doing things that we can from a personal perspective to improve where we can. When we recycle, we've got solar, we've got electric cars. We're trying to make the changes personally, but I think that there's some policy improvements we can make that can have a much more dramatic effect. We have some friends in Western Minnesota. They're regenerative farmers. They've been doing it for about 7 years, and we've been to their property a few times and seeing what's been happening with their soil health and what a wonderful opportunity there is to sequester carbon and use the soil as a carbon sink. One of the huge side benefits of their healthier soil is it holds much more water, and they can have a 4, 5, 6, 7 inch rain and not have any ponding on their property, whereas all of their neighbors are having ponding when it's just an inch of rain. The previous speaker mentioned nitrates in the water, and I think this is a huge opportunity not just to improve our air quality but also our water quality by looking at what we can do to improve our soil health. So I just want to speak strongly in favor of this bill. I think there's a great opportunity to learn and to educate, because I think very few people know what we have in terms of an opportunity to sequester carbon in our soils. And I'm also a University of Minnesota grad, so I'm going to put a plug in for the University of Minnesota. Anyway, thank you. Any questions for me?
Representative Swazinski does have a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is just a procedure. What was the motion on this bill?
This is to be laid over.
Okay. Madam Chair, I just noticed in the report that it was referred to the higher education finance policy in the Senate, this particular bill. Is there a chance that this would have to go to the higher ed committee in order to make it through in the House?
I will check with the author on that, and we'll
okay.
make sure that if it needs to, it does.
Sounds good, Madam Chair. And then also just looking, as far as carbon sequestration, as far as coal, would that be part of the study as far as things to be looking at and benefits?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think this would be a comprehensive look that the university could do on all the different types of carbon sequestration that we could do, whether it be coal, geologic, or biologic. I think it's really important to look at the large picture for the state of Minnesota, which is why I think the University of Minnesota looking specifically, like the U.S. Department of Energy has done studies on carbon sequestration, has talked about the value, but having Minnesota has a very unique landscape, and I think having a study specific to how we could use it would be helpful. So,
Madam Chair, another question. Do you have a department or in mind of who would actually receive the funding to do the study within the University of Minnesota?
Yes. Of course, I don't have that. Madam Chair, yes, I do. There is, I think it's biologic. It's one of the biologic departments at the University of Minnesota. I have spoken with professors there. One actually came, Representative Nelson, I think you were on the other environment committee, where he did testify in favor of the importance that this funding could do in this as a result for Minnesota, getting us some good comprehensive look at how this could be useful.
Madam Chair, is there folks from the university to speak on behalf of they want this money or...
Madam Chair, Representative, this was not a request from the University of Minnesota. This was something that I think advocates, you know, are saying that we're missing. When we kind of look at this larger picture, we don't have a full report on how can we best use carbon sequestration in the state of Minnesota. So it's not a request by the University of Minnesota. It was a bill that I brought.
Madam Chair, just so you've spoken with them, do they currently have the capacity to do this study? As far as their current staff, or will they have to hire additional staff to do this report?
Madam Chair, Representative, my understanding is they do have current staff that would be able to start on this. Whether or not they need a further staff, I have not heard that.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Edelson. I know that I attended the town meeting that you organized in the district you represent on climate issues last spring. Very well attended, a lot of enthusiasm for work on that issue. I would just wanted to say that on the record, I think this is very valuable, particularly if it would focus, and I'm not telling you what to do and not to do, but yeah, I think a real focus on the agricultural sector, in particular in Minnesota, there's absolutely just tremendous potential, the forestry sector to sequester carbon. And, you know, I think we've seen in other areas that coal is not necessarily the most economical or effective strategy here. So, but if it could focus on, you know, what we have in Minnesota, the agriculture, the forestry, I think that would go a long way. It's only recently that people have seen the potential for carbon mitigation in the transportation sector, but I think we have to do a lot more in the agricultural sector, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, and, you know, we did hear this in the environmental finance, and one of the things that I've been looking at quite a bit is regenerative agriculture. And, you know, the importance of grazing in our pastures and being able to, and oftentimes they're seeing more carbon sequestration because, you know, the cows are grazing some of that down. As they take a bite of grass, it pulls on the plant a little bit, some of the roots slough off. Well, that, you know, that is a little bit of an injury to the plant, but yet at the same time, what that does is it takes in carbon dioxide, sunlight, photosynthesis, all that stuff that was boring that we didn't pay attention to in 10th grade. And, you know, now it's, you know, making a lot more sense in looking at this, but it's, you know, we're storing a lot more carbon in our soils and our pastures than what we, you know, typically had been. So there's a lot of regenerative agriculture that's doing this. And you know, I'm seeing that, you know, for public and private lands, you know, there's quite a bit of research, especially in North Dakota, Minocan Farms and the Gabe Brown. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but there's a lot of regenerative agriculture that's sequestering a lot of carbon and doing a lot of good things. And I think, you know, it's you know, good that the university is, you know, finally studying this when the, you know, a lot in the private industry has been doing this for 25 years, and now they're finally getting recognized. So, thank you.
Representative Long.
Madam Chair, I was just wondering if I could have the other testifier maybe do her testimony as well, just in case members have questions for her.
We can do that. Yes.
If you'd Thank like you, to Madam Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Hannah Bernhardt, and to speak directly to what you just mentioned, I'm the owner and operator of Medicine Creek Farm. Since 2016, I've been raising grass-fed beef and lamb and pastured pork on 160 acres outside of the little town of Finlayson in northeastern Minnesota. And I'm one of the growing numbers of regenerative farmers in Minnesota. So regenerative agriculture is an approach to food and farming that doesn't just sustain itself, but actually improves and builds topsoil while enhancing biodiversity above and below the ground. When my husband and I began searching for land to start our farm, we knew we wanted soil health to be central to our mission of creating healthy food. For us, raising livestock on pasture was not just the ethical and humane way of raising meat, but a profound way of both regenerating farm land, which had been conventionally cropped and hayed before we took ownership, and addressing climate change. There are various ways to practice regenerative agriculture, including cover cropping, no-till, composting, multi-story cropping, and, as in our case, management-intensive rotational grazing on perennial pasture. Instead of allowing continuous grazing of one big pasture, which often leads to overgrazing and erosion, we create small paddocks out of temporary fencing and move our cows and sheep daily to fresh grass. Livestock, and especially cows, have a bad rap at the moment for contributing to climate change, but recent understanding of soil health has revealed the exceptionally important place of livestock in the ecosystem. What matters most is how livestock are raised, and biologists have found that grasses co-evolved with ruminants to respond positively to being grazed. The short explanation of how this works is that grazing stimulates root growth and causes the plant to produce root exudates, essentially a sugar solution, which feeds microorganisms in the soil. Those organisms return necessary minerals and nutrients to the plant in a symbiotic relationship and promotes a burst of leaf growth above the soil. This is important because the more grasses are stimulated to grow, the more carbon they pull from the atmosphere through photosynthesis. This carbon, as well as the carbon in decomposing plant matter that is trampled into the soil by the livestock, becomes organic matter in the soil that further feeds the microbial life there. So it turns out that healthy soil, aided by livestock, actually sequesters carbon. At the moment, agriculture in Minnesota accounts for 24% of greenhouse gas emissions. According to the Land Stewardship Project's recent white paper titled Farming to Capture Carbon and Address Climate Change Through Building Soil Health, shifting 25% of ruminants to well-managed grazing and 25% of cropland to a combination of perennial cover, diverse rotations, and cover crops could potentially lower Minnesota crop and livestock net greenhouse gas emissions by 30% compared to 2016 agricultural emission totals. So with this much potential, it's clear that we need more research into the carbon sequestration opportunities for one of Minnesota's biggest land uses. Climate change is a grave threat to our food production and security, and House File 3590 will allow the University of Minnesota to gather the data needed to enhance technical assistance for sound, climate-friendly farming practices and help us advocate for policies to incentivize the increased adoption of regenerative agriculture. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions here. We're starting with...
I just had a comment, really. I just wanted to thank the author for bringing forward the bill and the testifiers for being here to testify on behalf. And as so many of us have heard, the climate change issue is so important to many in Minnesota, and I think the University of Minnesota doing a comprehensive and thorough look at carbon emissions and sequestration, natural sequestration, on all land uses, I think, is really important, or land use types. And so I think the university is a great place to take this on. So thank you for bringing it forward. Thanks for being here today.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also just had a comment. I wanted to thank Representative Edelson for bringing this bill forward. And Representative Nelson, to your point, I think to the testifier's point, I think there are a lot of really innovative practices that we know sequester carbon, improve soil health, like rotational grazing, like cover crops. And we know that there's a lot of private sector interest in Minnesota, General Mills and Cargill and some biofuels companies that are looking to pay farmers to do these practices to reduce carbon. But I think they need the data to be able to support the research that shows that this certain practice will reduce carbon by a certain amount, and also to get the full scale of what's possible in Minnesota. So I think this research is a really important way to set ourselves up so that farmers in Minnesota can get paid for these practices and so that we can create real markets for them. So thank you very much, Representative Edelson.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just from looking at this, obviously I don't think this is going before the Ag Committee, but since grazing was brought forward, I just have a question for the testifier that just talked about, you know, we've been working quite a long time on trying to open up public lands for grazing, encourage the DNR. Have you ever attempted to get a contract through DNR in northern Minnesota? And just wanted to see how that process had went for you.
I haven't personally, so I don't have a lot of experience with that, but I know in more in western Minnesota that there are rotational grazers who have gotten contracts. So I know it's possible.
Sounds good. And then to the author, just, you know, if you could include in, if, as this bill potentially moves forward or changes it before it comes to the floor, but also if part of the report could be, you know, if these things were to happen, if you could reduce carbon by 30%, as the testifier said, that if they could kind of equate that into exactly how much that would change the temperature and in the state of Minnesota, that'd be great. Thanks.
I don't see any other questions. Representative Edelson, do you have a few closing comments?
Madam Chair, and Representative Swazinski, thank you, goodness. Biosystems Engineering Department is actually who I have been speaking with, the Biosystems Engineering Department at the University of Minnesota. I just wanted to make sure I clarified that. No, Madam Chair, I think that this would be a great thing for Minnesota. I think that as legislators, it's really helpful when we get feedback. I know that there are a lot of farmers on this committee, but I think just looking, being able to have informed decision that's based on research, and, you know, passing policies like that here at the Capitol would be very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll renew my motion that House File 3590 be laid over for possible inclusion. We're going to skip now just because other people are in other committees right now. So we're – oh, Representative Wasley is here. Oh, excellent. Come on up. Then we won't have to change our agenda. So the third bill that we have on the agenda is House File 4125, and I will move House File 4125 be laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome to the committee. There is an author's amendment coded A2, and I will move the A2 to get the bill in the shape the author would like. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Wozniak, welcome to the committee, and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my bill, House File 4125, establishes an energy-efficient grant program and also provides some funding to help leverage funding from the federal government that helps weatherize homes for low-income folks in Minnesota. So it's pretty simple in terms of what it does, but it's another opportunity for us to encourage folks to take up energy efficiency measures and help folks weatherize their homes as well. And I can talk a little bit about what the amendment does. Just wanting to make sure that we're doing all that we can to encourage participation in the program. So what the amendment does helps ensure that we're being cost effective with the program and leveraging grant dollars company with other programs that exist like this already, and then also changing a couple references to definitions so that we're all clear about what the definitions of energy efficiency are in the bill.
Is
and
there,
I'm open for questions. I have someone
like
up
to
here
have
to help.
Your witness, please.
She's not here to testify, just to answer questions if folks have questions.
Okay, fine. I don't see questions right now. We have an amendment A1. Is somebody going to offer that? Representative Baker.
And Madam Chair, thank you for that. Thank you, Representative Wozlowick, for this. I've been working on the SIP projects for a while, and it's been, for the most part, a pretty good project over the years in Minnesota. Residential energy programs are good, and we are sort of having a hard time finding some new opportunities for savings because we've done a good job with the first version of this. My amendment simply, and I hope you see this as a reasonable one, it sort of eliminates possible residential folks from getting sort of double credits or double dipping, if you will. So I think we want to see the intention move along to do some better things with this, but I hope that you would see this amendment as just a guardrail to make sure we're not having folks take advantage of programs like this. And I look forward to your comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess my comments on this are kind of a point for us in my amendment was that we actually want folks to have the opportunity to leverage other funds in this conversation. So the amount that are awarded from these grants are not to exceed the lesser of 2,000 or 34% of the total cost. And so we're trying to ensure that folks that may have other sort of significant things that they're doing in terms of these energy programs are able to access other sources, including the utility programs that exist.
And then, Madam Chair, members of the committee, kind of the point with this, too, to have them work with the conservation improvement programs that some utilities offer is SIP is very heavily vetted when it comes down to technologies that qualify for this. So when you're able to leverage these programs, not only are you able to leverage additional funding, so that way then we can have these grants go further, but then you're also making sure that customers who are looking to implement this are getting vetted, high-quality technology, building materials, equipment. And this is just a way to make sure that we're safeguarding and putting in place some consumer protections with it.
Representative Spasinski, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Just kind of, you know, we had the I'm just looking at, is there a, you, Representative Walzewick, do you have a Senate sponsor of this bill?
I do not at this time.
Okay. But do you have someone in mind that might be carrying the bill?
I have a couple people in mind, yes.
Okay. Madam Chair, just, you know, how does this, you know, we're looking at a $30 million appropriation. I'm sure if you've gotten a chance to kind of look at the governor's recommendation with his budget, you know, how does this bill jive up with the governor? Have you been in conversations with kind of the DFL caucus in the House and the DFL governor and what the potential is that, you know, no Senate companion, kind of where is this kind of sitting with things, I guess?
Well, of
just
course.
From a practical standpoint.
From a practical standpoint, the House has not made its decisions on budgeting yet. Those are to come. From another practical point of view, one of the things I observe about this particular bill, it creates jobs at a time when folks with some vision are worried about jobs in Minnesota. So it will serve a purpose that I think we weren't intending when the bill was first introduced, but it's going to be a clear benefit. And I know the governor is going to be worried about jobs as the virus spreads and that we have the consequences of it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just would you know when we'll find out when the budget from the Senate, when we'll know our targets here for the committee?
That's above my pay grade.
Okay, Madam Chair. Thank you.
We have an amendment before us. Members, the author recommends a no vote. All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No. No.
The amendment is not adopted. I don't see any further questions or discussions, so I will renew my motion that House File 4125, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion. And thank you all for coming.
Yep, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members.
Representative Brand. I'll move House File 3929 be laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome to the committee and tell us about your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House File 3929 is one of the 10 bills that was introduced through the Minnesota House Climate Action Caucus. I was asked to carry this bill, and I'm proud to do so as one of the founding members of that caucus. I think it does a few things, and it does a few things for the folks that I represent in my district. And so this targets both municipal utilities and co-ops, of which I have both in my district. And what it does is it provides up to $5 million in total projects for technology in the way of energy storage and in conjunction with both photovoltaic cells and wind turbines. And so essentially that is my bill. I don't have any testifiers today, unfortunately, because of the climate of what's going on and the global issues that are going on. However, I will stand for questions, and I'm happy to see if anybody else would like to testify from the audience.
Representative Swasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just looking, Representative Brand, do you have a Senate author of this bill?
I do. Okay. Unfortunately, the Senate sometimes moves a little slower than I'd like. But my Senate author is in the process of actually introducing the bill now.
Okay. So when would we expect to potentially see that on the other side? Or
I have just texted him that this morning, and I have not heard a response back. However, I would assume very soon. I introduced the bill last month.
Okay.
I sent over the information to him. The Senate's getting kind of overloaded as well with things, just like we are. But I'm hopeful that he will introduce the bill.
Sounds good. Thank you, Representative. Just in general, it sounds like there was 10 bills that were created out of this committee. Do we have an idea? Do all of them have Senate companions or not? It sounded like the last one didn't. This one might. Do we have an idea kind of where those bills are at? Are we going to hear more of them, or Madam Chair, or folks that are on the committee?
We can certainly discuss that next week.
Okay. Sounds good.
Representative Russell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author of the bill and to the majority party. I realize for many people this is the first time that you've experienced what's going to be a budget deficit in the state of Minnesota. I'm having a hard time understanding why we're here, Madam Chair. Congress has recessed until April. The National Basketball Association has suspended their regular season. The University of Minnesota has sent all the students to have remote long-distance learning. The governor's supplemental budget came out today where he puts the overwhelming majority of the money onto the bottom line because our surplus is now gone. Those are projected revenues. It's your committee. You can certainly call hearings and hear bills when you want, but it shouldn't take an order from the speaker to tell you and other committee chairs that we shouldn't be meeting anymore. We don't have the resources to spend unless people are going to be coming forward with budget reductions or tax increases. None of this general fund money is going to get spent because we don't have the money. The consequence of our tax code is we have a very volatile revenue stream. The Dow Jones is down 1,700 points again today. I would just encourage you, again, you don't need an order from the speaker to not have committee hearings. We should really be moving on and not bringing people in here, especially for bills that we're not going to have the money to spend. So thank you, Madam Chair.
I don't see any other comments from members. I'll renew my motion that House File 3929 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Are there any public comments for today? I don't see any, and so with that, we will adjourn.